Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Are you ready?
I was born ready, JB.
Just writing down my last few notes.
Writing down?
Yep, Australia, luckiest team in the world. Okay, pod on three. One, two, three, pod! Hello and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Tim Cocker is away this weekend, buying a new fence panel to replace the one he previously wore out. So I'm here with Phil. Good day, Phil.
Good day, JB.
Oh, so here we are, and we finally know the participants of World Cup 2015 final.
We do. Although, it could have been fairly easy to predict somewhere near the start of the tournament.
I know, and as wonderful as this World Cup has been, and if Tim was here right now, he would say this is the best World Cup ever.
And I would probably agree with him.
And I would agree with him. Hooray, consensus.
Yeah.
But doesn't this feel just a little bit like we knew the results before it happened? And as CJ once said, it's the hope that will kill you.
When he was talking about Scotland.
Yeah.
Now, part of me does think, in this game today, for example, I was half rooting for Argentina because I love an underdog, but I was also half rooting for Australia because it will give the best final.
Yeah.
And well, Australia-New Zealand will be a better final than Australia-Argentina. New Zealand-Argentina.
I don't disagree with you, but here's where I stand on Australia, which is I really don't want them to win. I didn't want them to win against Wales, obviously. I didn't want them to win against Scotland, obviously. And I really didn't want them to win against Argentina, because I just think it'd be amazing to have Argentina in the final.
It would be.
But it's hard not to like them. It's hard not to like the endeavour. It's hard not to like Pocock running around making incredible interventions in every stage of the game. They're just a really, really good team.
And someone like Adam Ashley Cooper, who scored a hat-trick, and Drew Mitchell. Adam Ashley Cooper was sensational.
Did he score a Julian Surveyor hat-trick, though?
That first try, the pass from Foley and the timing of the run to be absolutely full pelt to receive a 30-yard pass like that, that was brilliant.
Well, here's the other thing, right? Drew Mitchell, he's not the biggest.
No.
Nope. He's not the fastest. He's probably not even the most skillful. And he's certainly not the strongest. Yeah. Somehow he is the most effective. And actually, in some ways, it's same with Adam Ashley Cooper.
Yeah. There's, like you say, quicker, stronger, everything. People have more, but they're intelligent and they're a little bit older, they're a little bit more experienced. They slow down a little bit, but their intelligence allows them to read things and be in the right position at the right time.
For Adam Ashley Cooper, you could not be more correct. He seems to read everything.
Yeah.
As for Drew Mitchell, he just has these occasional bursts of brilliance. And he's not. It doesn't look like he's going that fast. He doesn't look like he's going to hand someone off, but he just finds a space and he keeps on going and the legs carry on churning. And before you know it, he's made 20, 30, 40 yards.
That the Adam Ashley Cooper try, the last one, where Drew Mitchell made 50-plus yards, mm-hmm. was very reminiscent of the try he scored for Toulon.
Thought exactly the same thing.
Where you think, right, now he's going to be tackled now. And he keeps going, no, tackle now. There's two men on him. He's going to be tackled. No, keeps going. Very impressive.
What do you make of the Australian back row?
Well, I said last week that I thought if Pocock plays, Australia will win. And Pocock was unreal. His skills at the breakdown, the number of turnovers he created, he was probably 6, 7, 8 turnovers just for David Pocock.
Yeah, he seems to be in the middle of everything. And even more importantly, it's kind of like Australia have said, we don't really need Nate. fact, everything a traditional eight does, we're kind of going to dispense with. So, you know, well, everyone has a big ball-carrying eight now. Wales have one. South Africa certainly have one. New Zealand, he can do it, but, you know, more of a distributor. And all. Well, no, he can do it. He is a world-class eight.
And they have Kano as well, who does... Kieran Reid's handling game is better, but Kano is the blunt instrument that you described last week. So Australia, yeah, they've got effectively two sevens, two fetchers, because they're not just normal. They're not just normal sevens. They are true traditional fetchers. But because they're so athletic, they're a bit smaller, but they're so athletic and strong and intelligent, they can do everything as a unit.
It's that compact strength that really gets me. That kind of on the ball terrier like, you just can't move them. Same with Richie McCaw. It's just incredible. And I wonder, I mean, England have bought into this hook, line, and sinker that you can't really get a proper fetcher because they're too small. And as such, you've got this kind of back row in the England team, which is 6'4", very, very good athletes, very powerful athletes, but not necessarily very good at the breakdown.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I just like to see the RFU after this tear up their kind of life coaching manual to how to play rugby for everyone from age 4 to elite level, and hopefully just look at things in a little bit more of a holistic way, and maybe England will produce a decent seven sometime soon.
It's not necessarily the RFU, it's got to come down from the club level, and they've got to look at talent and ability, not just prioritising size for back row players, because both of those are either 6 foot or under and say around 15 and a half stone. They're not big guys. And when you come to international back rows, they are small and light, but they are unbelievably talented and effective.
Actually, a quick apology from me there. I promised myself, it's actually an apology to myself, that I would not talk about England today. And within 6 minutes, I'm already criticising England.
You're steering the ship towards Lancaster bashing.
No, we will not mention anyone who's not relevant to the game of rugby today.
Okay.
As for Argentina, the improvement that they have made from what I saw in the championship, and I don't know if I just see in the championship a team which is getting beaten week in, week out, and therefore I can't really judge exactly how good these guys are. So what you see now is quite remarkable.
But they did it against South Africa in the Rugby Championship, where Imhoff scored a hat-trick in South Africa, and they put 40 points on them, and they played that beautiful brand of free-flowing rugby. But it's taken a few years for them. It's interesting hearing Kontopomi talk before the game. He said since 2009, they've had a directive in place right across the board for teaching basic skills to youngsters. I know the RFU have something similar, but it's clearly not quite as effective as the one that Argentina have got in place.
But these guys aren't really youngsters.
There's a mix, isn't there? Like, Bosch and Hernandez are not youngsters.
No, not by any stretch.
But Nicolas Sanchez and Cordera and Imhoff, they are. And those two second rows, 21, 22.
Well, here's a question for you. Who will have the better second row pairing in 3 years' time? Argentina or South Africa?
Good question. Good question.
Because it's absolutely terrifying.
And Whitelock and Retallick, they're, I think, 24 and 25, something like that. It's absolutely frightening.
And again, I said at the start of the show, Australia are the luckiest team in the entire World Cup. Do you disagree with that?
They had some decisions go against them. They had some decisions go for them. I don't think the yellow card should have been a yellow card, if that's where you're going.
Well, exactly right. I don't know how you're meant to judge these things now. I mean, even Clive Woodward was incredulous on this decision. And he's absolutely right. I can't even think of an equivalent where... the idea of playing rugby is so random. That guy, whoever the second row was, who went for the tackle, I can't remember which one it was.
Yeah.
He goes in, he gets kneed in the head, which is fine. I mean, obviously there's a duty of care there, right? I mean, you can't be in contact knee to head. That can't possibly be right. Well, if he was Alassane Tuilagi...
If he was Samoan, if he was a Tier 2 nation, that would have been a red card, 5-week ban minimum.
Minimum. So he does that. Now, if you intended to wrap your arms, but you dive into a man's knee and you don't wrap your arms, I don't even think it's a penalty.
It's hard to judge. From one angle, it looked like he was starting to wrap his arm, and just the force of Folau hit his arm back. So you can't wrap your arm if someone smashes it back. From others, it did look like he was a bit reckless.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's my frustration. So Wayne Barnes, adjudicating it, and he said, it looks between a penalty and a yellow card. Right, yeah, I can go with that. For me, it looks more like a penalty than a yellow
card. It does not look like a yellow card.
It doesn't.
It does not look like...
No.
A yellow card, right? Here's when we use yellow cards. It is to stop cheats. And what I mean by that, people slowing the ball down, if you're being constantly warned over and over again about lying on the wrong side of the ruck or collapsing a scrum or taking a man in the air to a lesser extent, but cheating things which slow down the game. I have no problem with yellow cards for that. But for things like a mistimed tackle, foul play, I think all that sort of stuff should be referred to some sort of citing commission and then deal with it.
I think it depends how dangerous it was. And this wasn't dangerous.
No, not at all. And here's the other thing as well. If the referee sees someone striking another player, or he sees a tackle like he saw today, and in the heat of the moment he says, play on, don't see a problem with that. That is it. Now, if a citing commissioner wants to pick it up later, absolutely fine. Or if the referee thinks, like in rugby league, they put them on reports, which I think is a great idea. All that, absolutely fine. What I don't like is three phases of play later, a TMO says, Jerry, you've got to go and have a look at last tackle, four blue. It makes no sense whatsoever. I went mad. And more...
I wasn't with you, but I could just imagine you shouting and bawling, ranting and raving.
Well, what's the point? I mean, rugby's got a real core following. I think I would describe myself as a core fan. I think
you fall into that category.
Yeah. I would be tempted not to watch rugby if it carries on like this. I'll go and find a different game. I'll go and watch rugby league. I'll go and watch MMA. I'll go and watch something which men can play without the danger of some judicious idiots getting on a microphone, calling up the referee. It's just not on. It's not on at all.
It was annoying. And it felt like after Australia's amazing start, Argentina were working their way back into it, and then the yellow card kind of blunted that Argentinian edge that they had.
And I'm so glad that Australia won by more than, was it, 2 points? Because that was a differential. Because if that would have been the difference, I would have lost my mind. I would have absolutely lost my mind. As it happens, Australia won relatively comfortably.
Yeah, it was 4-0. So it was relatively comfortable. Although it's... So there was a correlation between the Australia and the New Zealand game, in that South Africa didn't score any tries either. They got 6 penalties, Argentina got 5 penalties. And it almost felt like in both games, whenever Argentina or South Africa were getting on top and getting territory and getting continued phases together and breaking the line, New Zealand and Australia were put in a cynical, either slowing the ball down or hands in or diving over the top of the ball to prevent them from getting the... It was almost like a cynical accept the 3 points.
Yeah.
Rather than concede the 7.
I can't prove this, but I'm kind of along the same lines as you here, which is I think there's some sort of like Goldilocks zone on the field where they say, OK, not in the 22, because that's a guaranteed points, but maybe halfway to 10-metre line, give something away there.
Yeah, you can give it away, and particularly if you're not down the middle of the field.
Yeah.
If you're a little bit wider and they've bent the line and the defence is scrambling back, but the attack is coming through. It did... Both games, it just felt like the Australians and the New Zealanders were very intelligent in the way that they gave their penalties away, if that makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense. And it's something which I've been wondering for quite a while, actually.
Well, maybe it is cynical and intelligent play, but maybe that's been a little unfair to all the teams, actually. Maybe it was just the pressure that Argentina and South Africa were putting on New Zealand and Australia, and the pressures that the players are under. Mm. Because the New Zealand game, they gave away an uncharacteristic number of penalties. And it may or may not have been the cynical side, but it may have just been the pressure of the occasion and the pressure that South Africa were putting on them.
You know, if I was Australia now, I think I'd feel seriously aggrieved that every game they played in near enough. I mean, the England game, they just won hands down.
Yeah.
But every other game, it feels like they've had a lucky break. And it takes away from the majesty of some of the phenomenal defence.
Oh, phenomenal defence and phenomenal skill set going forward. The Drew Mitchell run and the Folau pass to Adam Atchison-Cooper, that was absolutely superb skill executed at the highest level.
Mm. What do you think is going to happen going forward now with Argentina? Because 2 World Cups ago, they made a semi-final.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really feel like they've kicked on since then. And I'll tell you why I'll say that. And I know I'm wrong in saying that, but I'll tell you why. And it's because in the championship, they continually get beat. Now, Last World Cup, they went out in the quarters. But to reach two semi-finals in three World Cups is one hell of an achievement. And now they've got this super franchise. I wonder if they're going to, you know, turn into something equivalent of South Africa or something equivalent of Australia.
First of all, I disagree that they haven't kicked on since 2007.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
2007, they had a very limited game plan in order to win knockout rugby with the massive boot of Hernandez and the kick chase. And it's great to watch. We love that kind of intelligent rugby, but it's not great to watch for a neutral or for someone who's not a big rugby fan.
No, to be clear, I think that they have progressed a lot, but it's not noticeable
because of where they are.
And if you think about it, when they came over last autumn, they lost to Scotland. In fact, I think they lost almost all their games.
Yeah, but they often don't get all their French players. So having a team in the Super Rugby will be good, because it means all of their players will always be available for the international selection.
Yeah.
And they'll all be used to playing for each other.
And it's such a strange beast that they've got here. So they've got players which are heavily suited to Northern Hemisphere rugby, which is why they're all here.
Yeah.
And yet they're playing in a Southern Hemisphere competition.
Well, they're getting the best of both worlds, because they're playing the club rugby in the Northern Hemisphere and they're playing their international rugby in the Southern Hemisphere.
Mm.
So they get the attritional warfare, close quarters combat of the top 14 and the Aviva Premiership, and then the open, expansive, exciting rugby of the Rugby Championship.
I think a few years' time, these guys might be absolutely terrifying.
Well, the Super Rugby franchise, I think it's positives, because it basically means that team will be around. They'll be playing together 35 weeks a year, however many games there are, they will be playing together. My only concern is that you'll get players who, because their Super Rugby team will basically be an international team, there'll be youngsters who might not get the opportunities because they've only got one team playing at that level.
Yeah.
So they might have to set up some links back to the Northern Hemisphere to send their youngsters, like Matera went to Leicester when he was 19, send their youngsters out to the Northern Hemisphere, get them top-level game time, and then send them back when they're ready for the Super Rugby.
Because at the moment, it's a hell of a gamble for a 19-year-old rugby player to say, oh, actually, I think I'm good enough at rugby, so I'm going to decamp and go to the French third division and hope that I get a contract in a second division or first division or whatever it is club. I read a phenomenal article in the Times regarding Fernandez Lobby.
Yeah.
And he was let me get this right, I think he was an engineer until he was about 23, because he wasn't convinced he could make it as a professional rugby player.
Awesome.
So I wonder how many more there are over there thinking, well, is it worth going to France or...
Well, like Contepomi. He's a doctor, isn't he?
Doctor, lawyer.
Is one of them a doctor, one of them a lawyer?
I'm not sure. I will tell you this, though. Do you remember Lafreda?
Lafreda?
Lafreda was the Argentine coach.
Okay.
He was an engineer by trade. And you might remember him because he went to Leicester straight after the World Cup.
Okay.
And I asked a question to Harry Ellis in one of these sportsmen's dinners. What was Lafreda like? Or it wasn't actually what was Lafreda like. I actually said, who was the worst coach that you've ever had? A typically negative question. to which he replied about Lafreda, because all he used to make us do is Canterbury Squares. And that was the entire training session.
So Canterbury Squares is in just a passing drill.
Yeah, yeah. So, do you know when you go corner to corner or whatever it may be? But going back to the guy you were speaking about, Matera, when he was at Leicester, I don't remember him doing a single thing.
No.
Getting injured, maybe?
He got injured. I think he had a shoulder injury. But he got some game time. And he was 19 when he went to Leicester. How many 19-year-olds do you see playing regular Premiership rugby?
Owen Williams? When he first moved? Flipping there. He didn't do anything, and now he's going back to the super franchise. Actually, it should have been the other way around. He should have started at a super franchise somewhere,
and then get farmed
to Leicester. And it comes back to what I keep saying about the Welsh regions. The best thing for the Welsh regions is if they decide to farm out their older players to get the young players experience.
Now, I do agree with that to an extent. I do think it has weaknesses, and the two weaknesses are. Not necessarily available for all of the international training camps and the rest weekends in the Six Nations. You got the likes of Jamie Roberts turning out for Racing Metro v Clermont away on his rest weekend.
Nice.
Yeah, that's not great. And the other one is it means that the Welsh regions are weak, so you're not going to get as many supporters. So it's going to be less attractive for younger players to go to that. And it just, it kind of diminishes the credibility of the local rugby, which should be a natural feeder for the bigger rugby, both in terms of fans and players.
Yeah, and actually, I'm looking forward to talking about the difference between the Pro 12 and the Aviva later on in this pod. But before we move on to the next game, which was New Zealand-South Africa, probably worth mentioning that you can find us on the excellent Acast app. You can download us and subscribe so our podcast magically appears on your device whenever you want it, or should I say, whenever we want you to have it. And finally...
whenever JV says it's okay for you to have a podcast.
Whenever we decide to go to the Dungeon and podcast. And finally, follow me at Jay Beardmore or the podcast at Rugby Podcast.
Yes, and you'll see some very good, normally some interesting and insightful tweets about whatever game is taking place or whatever injury or whatever's just happened, whatever breaking news there is.
Exactly. So, New Zealand, South Africa. I'm gonna have to make a confession here. I only saw the last 20 minutes. I had to listen to the first hour of it on the way home to North Wales.
Very nice. Well, so, I have a confession as well, JB.
Uh-oh. What's your confession?
I was at a wedding up in Edinburgh. I was hosted by the very lovely friend of the pod, CJ, and his lovely girlfriend, Faith.
Wife,
indeed. Faith, who put us up in Edinburgh and provided us an excellent meal on the Friday night. A really, really good meal and a few beers on the Friday night. But I was at this wedding, and fortunately the ceremony had finished by 4 o'clock. So me thinking it would be not too rude to just... sit quietly on my own and watch it on my mobile.
Not rude at the slightest.
Not rude
at
this. It's a World Cup semi-final.
You're working.
That's exactly what I tried to explain to my girlfriend. She didn't take it very well, unfortunately. So I've seen the full game now, but I didn't watch it live, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, if we're going to name this podcast something for the World Cup, it should be "It's the Hope That Kills You," because this is exactly the same sort of thing, right?
Yes. I mean, were you hoping for South Africa then?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, I do like South Africa in principle. And what I mean by that is I love muscular, big, pounding rugby. If only Tim is here, he would have an absolute field day with that. And I like the idea of it. I also think that their backs are tremendous. Well, until you get to the outside backs. And, yeah, I would have liked to have seen that style of rugby get a little further. And I'd like to see the upset against the All Blacks. It just feels like everyone you speak to trots out the same cliche over and over again about how good the All Blacks are without actually watching them. And it annoys me, really. It really annoys me. But these cliches are true for a reason.
Yeah. And the All Blacks, in my opinion, were the better team. They scored 2 tries to 0, and they had the majority of possession. They made far more metres. They beat far more defenders. I think it was 20, but New Zealand beat 20 defenders, South Africa beat 3 defenders.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
So they played far more of the rugby, but some ill-discipline, as we mentioned before, and some very good kicking from the tee from Andre Pollard, kept South Africa in it for the full game.
Mm.
And it's a bit frustrating that Andre Pollard's kicking from the tee was good, but his kicking out of hand wasn't very good. I didn't think he was very tactically very aware. And like we mentioned, New Zealand just sit with 3 men back. And he was kicking to Bin Smith. Nihi Milner-Scudder. And they just run it back with intent. They're so good under the high, so solid under the high ball. Their positioning's so good. And the return is so good.
I really want to see a team challenge New Zealand. I really want to see how good they can be. That's what it feels like to me. That's probably why I don't like them, because I've not seen them under any kind of pressure. And that's why I do quite like the Australian team, because I have seen them under pressure, and you've seen them dig deep again. I mean, the display against Wales, as heartbreaking as it was for me, was quite magnificent, really.
Oh, 13 men and you defend for more than 10 minutes.
Three held up tries. That's unheard of.
Yeah.
Simply unheard of. Whereas New Zealand, it just feels a little bit too easy.
Now, that was one of the reasons why I was supporting Australia in today's game, because they've got a real chance. They've got by far the best chance of beating New Zealand, in my opinion.
I don't disagree. But where do you stand then on the difference between... Well, sorry, not the difference, but how good do you think that French team were that they beat? Or were the French team just rubbish and maybe we've got a slightly inflated opinion of New Zealand?
I said at the time, I think it was 6-1, half a dozen of the other. I think New Zealand played very, very well, but France were all over the place, bar Spedding, Fofana and Pickermalls. I think everyone else was, they almost looked disinterested. They were running lazy lines in attack and in defence. They were missing tackles. They weren't even getting themselves in the position to make tackles. So it was, New Zealand were great, and you still have to, even against underperforming international side like France, you still have to actually score the tries.
Yeah.
But see, it does not tell us a lot about New Zealand that game.
No, not really. So I'm all at sea when talking about New Zealand, because are they this magnificent team that destroyed France, or have we got a better glimpse of them against South Africa? Where they were impressive, I guess, but they weren't absolutely brilliant. They weren't.
Yeah,
they weren't the New Zealand that I've kind of that the cliche suggests that they are.
And they only won by 2 points against a South African team that was limited, and that did only make 3 line breaks.
That's incredible.
Yeah, not one South African player made more than 30 yards with ball in hand. Mm. Not a single one.
Yeah, I was also a little disappointed in Victor Matfield coming on. I didn't think that he did well at all. I think he's underperformed pretty much all tournaments. And the other guy that underperformed was the other veteran, Flory Dupreer.
Yeah, he didn't have a great game either.
It felt like he had some sort of tactical meltdown.
His kicking was, well, it's solid in the first half, but not always great. And some of his decision making, like you said, not as good as what we saw the previous week.
Yeah, you know, everyone bangs on about caps, like how important international caps are. And I'm starting to think, yeah, they are important. You need, I don't know, a handful, say, you're a good seasoned international, right?
There is kind of a tipping point where you get to a point where you start to diminish. So as you get older, you start to slow down. You start to slow down a little bit. Maybe your strength work isn't as good. But the best players are still improving. Like, Adam Ashley-Cooper's got 100 caps.
Mm.
And he's using his... It's partly the team he's playing in, but it's partly the intelligence and experience that he's got.
Well, see, I'm going to go the other way here and not say that, oh, caps are all important and you need so many players with a certain amount of caps. I'm going to go the other way and say, when you get to a certain number, you're done. So let's call it like 86 caps.
No.
And then you're done.
No, Richie McCaw is just getting started on 86. Yeah.
Or maybe like, you know, like a marquee player. You can have 2 of them. But then everyone else has just got to go because you're stifling young players coming up. And, you know, maybe Gethin Jenkins would have been best leaving at 98 caps. I'm just saying.
Maybe. I think there's no hard and fast rule. But there is a tipping point where as the number of caps increases, you are diminishing, like some of your talents are diminishing to a point where there's a crossover and it's not really worth it.
Even the young lads who've got a handful of caps, or more than a handful of caps, look at George North. I mean, there's not a day that goes by when I don't worry about George North taking, you know, a little bit more damage to his body. He's on 50 caps now. Well, probably 54 or something now.
I think more than that, yeah.
Which is just incredible. And he's only, what, 24, say, 25?
I think he might be younger than that.
Oh, my word.
I think he might be 23 with 55, something like that, even more than that.
Yeah, and to even add to that, I just wonder if these players now, with all the internationals that can be played and all the club rugby that will be played and the intensity which they play them at, whether we're going to actually, this might be the high point of highly capped players. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the average amount of caps in international squads now will probably be the highest that it's ever been. Because as it gets more and more physical, these players are going to have shorter and shorter careers and eventually less caps. That's my theory, at least.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Unless they do change the balance, and so you've got fewer domestic or fewer international games, so players are, instead of playing 35, 38 games a season or a year, mm-hmm. they're playing kind of 25, 28 games.
I'm sure I've had this chat before.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm sure we have.
We definitely have. George North, by the way, he's 23.
Yeah.
He was 23 this year. He has 55 caps for Wales and 3 for the British and Irish Lions.
Why is my life so bad? I mean, genuinely, some of these guys.
I think you're a couple of kg heavier than him at
yes.
the moment, though.
A small victory. although, I mentioned this before, I actually have a winning record against two Alangis.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I played against one of the Tuolangi clan who was playing for Penrith on one occasion.
Right, okay. Is this like some long-lost second cousin?
I think he was at Newcastle, and then I don't know what happened to him next, but I do know what happened to him next. He went to play for Penrith and lost against me. So, Beardmore won, Tuolangi's nil. And long may that continue.
I think there's a good chance of holding that unbeaten record.
So, anything else of note which you took from this game?
Well, there's the McCaw incident. Well, actually, first of all, let's talk about the Kano incident, because his first half was very eventful.
Okay.
He was on great form. He scored the try. He was making meters all over the place, big hits. And then there was the stupid. It was a lazy running line to try and disrupt. So he ran across the back of the ruck to try and slow down the scrum half getting the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And as the ball popped out, he just cynically booted it back to his own side. Yellow card, 100%. I don't know.
That was exactly what you use the yellow card for.
Yeah.
Exactly what you use the yellow card for.
So deliberate and cynical. So there was that incident, which I've got no problems with. And then there's the McCaw incident, which a lot of people are making a lot out of. Now, have you seen this?
No. Describe it to me.
So McCaw is accused by some people of elbowing Francois Lowe in the head.
Good.
At the back of...
good. No, that was genuinely good.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I mean, sorry, carry on.
Okay, I'll carry on. So, Francois Lowe steals the ball, passes it back to, I don't think it was a scrum half, it was someone who's behind him who takes the ball in. And as McCaw, like, runs round the back of the ruck, he bumps into, he just catches Francois Lowe, and Francois Lowe, like, is kind of taken aback, but carries on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Francois Lowe needed 16 stitches. Oh, he needed 20 stitches, 16 to one wound and 4 to another.
Wow. This is from one elbow.
Well, the accusations that started first thing this morning were that it was from this elbow.
Yeah.
But I've reviewing the incident, and I've seen a couple of other reviews of it, I'm pretty certain there was no elbow at all, and it's people are trying to be kind of divisive.
Besmirch Richie McCaw's good name.
Good name, yeah. Or just... It's people cynically looking for clickbait, just looking for clicks. And
okay.
So there's calls for him to be cited, which I think is... on review of it, I think it's nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Francois Lowe got the two cuts from completely unrelated separate incidents.
Well, there is something incredibly bitter, isn't there, about a team that has lost, or fans that have lost, asking for a sighting on a player that has won. And it just seems to happen quite often.
Francois Lowe was asked about the incident and he did not mention McCaw at all.
He's probably concussed. I think you got to not to harp on about this because it's in the past and all the rest of it, and I'm sure we have spoken about it at length, but you've got to understand what the spirit of the game is about and then ref it accordingly, and maybe the occasional elbow is in there. That's all I'm saying. Maybe it is. Not always. Not blatantly in front of the ref, but maybe it is.
I'm not necessarily sure I agree with that.
Mm.
But hopefully sense will prevail and he won't even get a sight in and we won't be talking about this. And on Saturday, Richie McCaw will win his 149th international cap.
My word.
Yeah.
My word. And, yeah. And not actually in a traditional position... that is going to last long.
Oh, it's 7.
I mean, you'd accept. Let's just go through this. Which positions do you think have got the potential for the most caps?
Scrum half, fly half.
Those are two. Maybe a prop, because you do tend to get stronger as you go. I mean, it's not
but a lot of props don't develop until they're 25.
Yeah.
So
so there's not many caps.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Good point. So to be a 7, the type of 7 is as well. And actually, he's had a lot of time injured. I mean, he could have actually added to the amount of caps he's got significantly.
He could have, and he had like a 6-month rest period fairly recently as well. But there's probably another half dozen caps that he missed out on.
Right, here you are, Phil. This is what I want you to do for the next podcast.
Okay.
I want you to go and look over players and say, let's just pick out a random number of caps. 80 caps.
Okay.
Then I want you to give me the top 5 players who have played the most games available to them. So if you've been available for 80 games and you've played 80 consecutive international games, you've got 100% record. And I want to know who the most consistent, who have got the most caps they possibly can do. Because I think Richie McCaw will probably be relatively low because he's always picked when he's available. So even he'll be in like the top, over 80 caps, he might be in the top, 10? But he's not probably right at the top there.
I don't know. It's hard to say. God, it would be, because you'd have to analyse every single person's availability for every single game across more than 80 matches.
That's why you're doing it.
I'm not sure.
No.
Oh, sorry, I am doing it.
Yeah, exactly right.
Richie McCaw as well. This will be his 110th cap as captain. 110 caps as international captain. Of which, you know how many? So he's played 109. Do you know how many he's won?
Okay, how many has he lost as captain? I don't think he's lost any more than 10.
Ooh, he's lost 11.
Oh.
And 2 draws. So 109 and won 96 test matches.
How is this not boring for him now?
That's astonishing. 4th highest captain of all time is Sergio Parisse. Now, has he won more than McCaw has lost?
Sorry, has he won
more games? So,
I see. So you're asking me, as captain, has he led the Italian team to more victories than McCaw? Okay.
Than McCaw has had defeats.
I think.
And he's played 66 compared to McCaw's 109.
I think Parisse has led his team to 13 victories.
14 victories. Oh. Not bad. So he has won slightly more than McCaw has lost. But it's horrendous. I've mentioned this on the pod before. Like, one of the best players of all time.
I wonder if he's
a great captain.
Parisse goes to bed at night thinking, why did I not play for Argentina?
No.
What was in it for me to join these bunch of clowns who have had every opportunity to be good and yet point blank refuse to improve? Just refuse. It's like a... it's like they're trying to prove a point.
Yeah, poor Parisse. He's got a...
No, not poor him.
Poor Parisse.
Because he's the helm of this awful team and they just don't do anything.
He's got a dismal 21% win rate as captain.
Maybe he's just not a very good captain.
Maybe. I mean, he's an exceptional player.
100%.
Maybe he just really winds up all his players by strutting around.
Maybe it's all about him.
Strutting around with Miss World on his arm.
Sorry, Miss World with Parisse on her arm. I mean, he's the...
the trophy husband.
Yeah. Exactly right. Is he captain of Stade Francais as well?
Yeah.
Huh. Maybe not then. Okay, shall we move on over to the Premiership?
I think that's a good idea.
Okay, what game shall we talk about first?
Do you want to do it chronologically?
Okay, do you want to talk Gloucester or Sale then?
Well, the one I saw was Gloucester Saracens game. Admittedly, I watched it starting at 1 in the morning on the Friday night when the girls had gone to bed and we'd had a few.
And you watched some naughty stuff.
Oh yes. The guys kicked back with the Gloucester Saracens game.
Nice.
And a little bit of whiskey.
Okay. And what do we think of the game then?
It wasn't the best encounter, was it?
No, not even close. Saracens just do what Saracens do. That's the reason that they're champions. And, you know, we thought it was Gloucester's year. It's definitely their year, though.
Next year might be their year.
Next year, I
think that is the one.
I predict Gloucester to go on a 5-game losing slide, though.
Quite possible.
absolutely guaranteed. To me, Saracens looked very, very efficient. Their defence looked absolutely awesome. They're just Saracens.
Yeah. They didn't do anything special, though. Nothing incredible.
But when do Saracens do anything special?
Yeah. Well, I did think they were special in the final against Bath.
Yeah, but do you know what they are? They're basically the club version of the Welsh team.
Go on.
Well, they're just mega work rate, defence, good tactical awareness, and that's what they do.
Yeah.
And you don't see much attacking flair from Saracens. So,
okay. Yeah. I thought Mike Ellery played well. He scored the try early on, but made a couple of good breaks. It'd be interesting to see if they do continue with him as the kind of replacement for Strettel. Because last season he was there. He's a former England Sevens player.
Yeah, that's right.
So he's quite big and quite strong and quick.
Have they replaced Strettel with any big signing? They haven't, from what I can think of.
There's no one I can recall. I mean, their signing's been fairly limited this season.
Well, like I said a few podcasts ago, apparently they're going to stop spending money. So watch his space.
Going to stop spending money?
Stop spending money.
Well, that's an interesting point, because the announcement last week on the salary cap. So there's been talk that two clubs have breached salary cap, but nothing official, it's just rumours. But then they've just announced two more increases over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
So it's going to go from 5.5 to 6.5, and then from 6.5 to 7.
I think it's stupid.
I think it is.
I think it's absolutely... Unless a complete... my suspicion, and you know me, I'm all about speculation and innuendo rather than facts. I'll leave that to you and Tim. My theory here is that there's so much pressure from wealthier owners who tend to have more power because they're wealthier anyhow.
Yeah.
That they're going to put up the salary cap to favour those clubs. So Bath can outspend, if it is Bath, which it is. And maybe so Saracens can, because traditionally they've always spent.
Yeah.
It's a nonsense. If we look at the Premiership now and we compare it to the Pro 12, there isn't a comparison, really. You know, Pro 12, kids, empty stadiums. Stadium's not fit for purpose.
You're talking more about the Welsh side here, and maybe the...
Well, Edinburgh.
Edinburgh are doing all right at the moment.
No, they do fine. They're an okay team to watch, but they're playing in an empty, wherever it is that they play, the National Stadium, and the product just isn't very good. The Premiership, the product is superb. It is that and the Super Rugby, Southern Hemisphere, are the two best products that they can watch domestically.
Agreed.
So by increasing the salary cap, unless they can ensure that everyone across the board can increase it as well.
Well, yeah, you can spend up to it. But I'm pretty certain they will be able to, given the new BT Sport deal.
I hope so.
They certainly should be able to get close. Now, the increase on salary cap, I like it from one perspective, because it should mean you can retain more of the English players, more of the quality England players.
And careful what you wish for, though, Phil.
Keep them available. Well, I think that's a good thing, because you've got 12 teams to spread them out across. It's not like Wales, where you've only got four teams, and they will get good experience.
Unfortunately, though, Phil, you can't square the circle of the two most powerful leagues in the Northern Hemisphere have produced the two most disappointing international teams.
Well, and that comes on to my second point.
Okay.
Which, and this is a huge issue in France, which has a much higher salary cap, is that if you're just going to use this additional salary cap to bring more Kiwis, Australians and South Africans, then that is not a good thing.
No.
Because it's like France is a perfect example of what we do not want.
Yeah, 100%.
What we do not want teams just having foreign militants coming in.
Well, not militants?
Journeymen.
Wow.
No militants from Syria? No militants. Journeymen coming in. For big money.
Mercenaries,
yeah.
Militants.
Militant mercenaries.
I completely agree. I think Premiership's got the balance roughly about right.
Yes, I do. But then you look in the New Zealand teams that are playing in Super Rugby, how many foreign players do they have?
Well, that's really interesting, actually, because from everything I've said, you could basically discredit it by saying, what about New Zealand?
Yeah.
Because they're all New Zealanders. Unless
there's a few islands, yeah, but a lot of the Fijians or Samoans who actually play for, well, certainly the Samoans, a lot of them were actually born in New Zealand to parents of Samoan heritage.
Yeah, and here's one for you: there are more New Zealanders playing in the Islander teams than there are Islanders in the New Zealand team.
Correct.
But that is a great example of the opposite to what I'm saying, which is get rid of your good players quickly and blood some more youth.
Yeah.
Or do they do that? Because if you're dead wood, if for want of a better word, they do just ship you out and you do go and play in the Premiership or the top 14.
You'll play in the ITM Cup.
Yeah.
You're playing the lower standard. Super Rugby this year was competed between Highlanders and the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, bar a couple of Islanders, either of those teams had maybe two or three foreign players in those two teams? Across the two teams?
I'm not even sure it's that. I mean, there's a couple of Japanese, was there for?
There's one.
That's the Chiefs.
The scrum half plays for. He plays for the Highlanders.
Behind Aaron Smith, doesn't he?
Yes. So he's second choice. But yeah, there's one there, maybe a couple of Islanders. But you've got there 20 plus guys getting experience of Super Rugby final. Plus the other guys who are in the knockout stages, like the Chiefs. I'm not sure if Crusaders made it this year. But
you, I mean, you know, don't you, that you shouldn't ever trust the New Zealanders, or you should never try and copy them.
Yeah. Well, you should never listen to what... You can watch what they do, but never listen to what they say.
Correct. Well, no, not even that. Because I think... my conspiracy theory on the New Zealanders is that they come up with all this nonsense, like, oh, it's about culture, it's about the system, not about the outcome, we do this, and all the Northern Hemisphere teams are trying to copy them, and New Zealand are doing no such thing. England are busy sweeping their own changing rooms, trying to be good people, and New Zealand are out there practicing lineouts.
Laughing all the way to the bank.
Exactly right.
We were sent an image today by... It was Joe Simpkins, he's good on Twitter. He sent us a book by James Kerr called Legacy, and it's what the All Blacks can teach us about the business of life.
Oh, wow.
Includes a quote on the back from... the quote is, "Very insightful. I recommend it to all involved in developing high-performing teams in sport or business." And that was from...
Stuart Lancaster.
Now, if anyone wants a recommendation about developing high-performing teams in sport, do not speak to Stuart Lancaster.
Well, before we go on to our next game, is it just worth mentioning the book House of Lancaster?
I've already mentioned it once this weekend.
The poor man. I mean, talk about kicking a man when he's down. Yeah, I don't want to do it, but God, do I enjoy it. I was reading today about England have got their panel who are going to review everything.
Which is another farce. Sorry, go on.
Well, they're going to review everything and nothing simultaneously, which is an incredible achievement. And in doing so, they're bringing in Sir Ian McGeoghan, who any rugby fan really loves. Sir Ian.
I do not.
Do you not?
I do not have time for Sir Ian.
I really don't.
When I've watched him on the Lions DVDs, he feels like he's from a different era.
He feels
like he's preaching stuff that they were doing in 1970, and his clock is still set on in the 70s.
I don't disagree with that. I think he's like a figurehead type rather than running my club.
No.
He'd be way down the list of people.
And when I listen to him as a pundit, I always feel like he's just a bit kind of a bit outdated, and it's like he doesn't quite appreciate the modern game.
Yeah, there is something in that, which is I think there's a lot of guys out there who haven't kept up with the times of exactly what modern rugby is about.
Stephen Jones from the time, and Stuart Barnes as well.
So from that point, I don't disagree with you. But in terms of his contributions to things like Lions DVDs, he unsurpassed. So you've got him on the committee. You've got
Ian Ritchie,
Ben Kay.
Yeah.
Another guy who's doing the interviews called Bowring. Have you heard of him? Is it Ian Bowring?
There's four Ians.
I'm not sure if Bowring's actually on the panel.
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Here's the point that I'm getting. Forward of Lancaster's book is written by Sir Ian McGeoghan.
Not only that, but Sir Ian McGeoghan was on the panel that appointed Lancaster.
Yes. Oh, in fact, two of them are.
Ian Ritchie as well.
Ian Ritchie. So there's two guys here who are going to probably sack the... Well, they're going to be asked to sack the guy who they originally appointed. And I don't really have much of a problem with that, because that happens a lot of time in business anyhow. Ian McGeoghan has also written the foreword to Lancaster's book. And now, I don't really see how you can be impartial there.
That's my problem with it, the impartiality. Because they both backed him to the hill when he was first appointed, they're going to want to demonstrate why they backed him in the first... They're going to want him to. And it almost feels like like Ian Ritchie, who is... has selected the panel and selected Lancaster, has positioned this to give him another 4 years. That's the feeling I'm getting from this. If, in my mind, that review panel should be completely independent. I would take four guys who have nothing to do with England. I'd take different coaches from elsewhere who aren't involved in the game, retired coaches, and get those guys doing it.
I don't know if I agree, actually. I mean, I don't think independence for independence sake is necessarily worth it. And maybe it should just be Ian Ritchie that calls the shots on his own and just gets it done. and if it fails, it's on him. Because in my opinion, these panels basically they're just covering themselves.
So I'm not talking about the appointment of the next coach necessarily. What I'm talking about is the review of what went wrong.
Yeah, but if you're correct and you think they're positioning themselves to get Stuart Lancaster another 4 years,
yeah.
Well, in that case, it is a covering thing, because if they give him another four-year contract, whoever's in charge of the RFU can say, well, it wasn't my decision. You know, I assembled a panel of experts just like I should have done, and this is what they said. So I'm just doing what the experts said. And he should really be the expert.
Do you think any experts would come to the conclusion that Lancaster needs another 4 years?
No! No!
I mean, so there's no danger of that?
Well, any expert would never have appointed Lancaster in the first place. That'd be the point. Right.
I think we need to stop this now, because we started talking about Gloucester Saracens.
But this is important!
We've somehow gotten to another Lancaster rant.
Well, here we go, right?
Via the salary cap.
Well, let's not just rant about Lancaster. Why don't we take this ball by the horns and just rant about England full stop, which would be this. Who was the last England coach who was actually a real well-respected coach in their own right in the club scene? I would argue their most successful coach on the club scene is probably Andy Robinson. After that, you could probably say Brian Ashton.
Brian Ashton, yeah.
But did Brian Ashton win anything with Bath?
I don't know.
And that's another thing. They keep picking these guys from the bloody academy. They're teaching kids. And this is what this is the whole Bowring thing. He is the guy who sets up academies, brings through the coaches, and Lancaster being his pet project, he's now going to have to fire him.
Yeah.
So it's just... the whole thing's a mess. But if you think about it, you've got Robinson, you had Ashton, you had Johnson, you had Lancaster. You show me the Heineken Cup winning coach out of that lot.
Yeah.
It's just not good enough. So that comfortably covers Gloucester versus Saracens. Do you agree?
Comprehensive review.
Comprehensively. One last thing about Saracens. Kit is terrible.
Oh, that wasn't a pretty sight. The two kits there.
Yeah.
I love the Gloucester shorts.
I think Gloucester look all right, actually.
Their shorts are great. The tops, not for me. That big square in the middle, and it just feels like it doesn't fit right.
But at least they're trying, though.
They're in the right direction. It's a step in the right direction, just not a very big one.
You know, if you squint... Right. And the players are playing at distance.
And there's a light fog over the pitch.
Oh, yeah, and your skybox isn't quite plugged
in. Yeah, you're in standard def rather than high definition.
You will see that they are in hoops, and I I appreciate it. As for the Saracens, I mean, I actually don't think that kit, when you look at the, say if I held up the shirt and then underneath it I held up the shorts and there's a little gap, you say, oh, that's a nice top actually,
yeah,
not bad shorts, but you add them together and it looks like they're wearing football shorts from the 1930s pulled up just below the nipples.
It just looks weird. Everyone looks disproportionate.
Yeah,
everyone looks like they're like, yeah, their ass finishes just below their shoulder blades.
Yeah, I think they probably need to revisit that kit. And Saracens have got one of the Premiership's nicest kit if they go back, as have Gloucester, if they go back to...
To the black and red.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, that's such a nice combination. How can you get it wrong? So
anyway, the other Friday night games?
Sharks versus Worcester.
Yes. I've not seen the full game.
I've seen the highlights.
But it kind of went as we expected, didn't it?
Yeah, well, this is a team that couldn't score any points away to Saracens and then go home, play behind closed doors and got 27 points. I mean, that is typical Sale. They do it with a bunch of nobodies and Danny Cipriani. It's quite incredible.
Yeah, Danny Cipriani kicked a few conversions, ran in a try himself on the 80th minute. Another try for Josh Beaumont, following on from last year, I mean.
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, if you want a coach who gets so much out of his players. There you go. There he is.
Dean Ryan.
Dean Ryan, everybody. Brilliant. And I think Worcester will be a little disappointed. Although, they looked like a much better team than that score suggested.
Worcester?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're so far superior to London Welsh, it's not even funny.
Oh, yeah. This season, well, I certainly wouldn't like to predict now who's going to go down. I think it's... Worcester, London Irish and Newcastle are the contenders from what I've seen.
Yeah. I'm going to say this, which is London Irish have invested too much money to go down. Now, the players might not be top draw, but they're not bad either. And to bring in a coach like Tom Coventry and all of his assistants with all the success that he's had previously, That's a pretty decent setup.
Yeah.
So I think they'll come good around after Christmas now, because of the delay in the season. And Newcastle Falcons were a complete and utter joke no longer. That plastic pitch has actually transformed how they play. And exciting news, I have some information on Mr. Hammersley, the Hammer.
The Hammer, yes.
Yeah, the Hammer apparently has a first-class degree from Durham in economics and turned down a high-paying job in Barclays to go and play for Newcastle Falcons.
Wow.
So there you go. Facts about one of my new favourite player.
Simon the Hammer. Hammersley.
Yeah, so I don't think Newcastle will go down because I just think they're actually building something fairly substantial.
But then who's going to go down? Because Newcastle and London Irish, neither of them have won yet. And they've been...
Yeah.
I was expecting more of them.
Do you know who I thought would really struggle?
Go on.
And they have is Harlequins.
Yeah.
Really thought that they would struggle. Maybe not go down, but I can see them going on a bad run of results.
Yeah, but no, I think their signings have been astute. I think they've strengthened where they need to strengthen. Mm. They've not yet had Jamie Roberts come back in. Their England players come back in. That Luamanu, the 8, looks quite handy, doesn't he?
Ah, right, okay. So, when you said Luamanu then, I thought you meant Christian Luamanu, the centre of the Tigers, but you mean the new 8 for Quins?
Yes.
Got you.
Yes,
right.
The Quins 8. Yeah, he looks quite handy. And they only lost by 3 points with a late try from Leicester at Welford Road, which not many teams will do, because Leicester are starting to get a few of their players back as well.
That is like the story of Leicester, though, is it not? what's Leicester doing this week? Oh, they're starting to get a few of their players back, and Richard Cockerell is whinging about something or other.
Refereeing decision, yeah, unavailability, weather.
Which leads me to, like, why did they go out and John de Villiers? It's exactly the same thing.
Well, have they got him? It's not been announced yet, has it?
Oh, no, it hasn't.
It's speculation.
Allegedly going to get Jan de Villiers.
Replacing 36-year-old, or 37-year-old Saramai Bai with 35-year-old John de Villiers for some longevity. after 28-year-old Anthony Allen retired through injury.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he hadn't retired, he probably would have made the England team, and I would have been right about that. And this year is the year of Miles Benjamin.
This year, Miles Benjamin and Gloucester's year.
No, definitely this year.
This year.
Chiefs, comfortable winners with in a hit out against London Irish.
Yeah, and looking good as well. I Chiefs, for me, top four this year.
Give me your top four right now.
Northampton, Saracens, Bath, Chiefs. I think Wasps will just miss out. I think Leicester will miss out.
I don't think Leicester will make it. I think you're right there. I think Wasps will make it.
Who for, though? Bath, nailed on.
Are they nailed on?
I think they are. I think they're a slow start because of the number of the people they've lost to the internationals. I think they will make it.
Do you know what? I really can't call it. I think this just shows the quality of the Premiership. I literally can't call anything. I mean, if you think about the results that we predicted last week.
Oh, last week were all over the place.
Yeah. This week, not much better, although we're starting...
I got 6 from 6 this week.
What, you predicted the Wasps would beat Bath?
I did, and I actually had some money on it as well. I put a six-way accumulator and won...
How did you win?
I put £2 on it and won 24 quid.
Oh, fine, whatever. Wasps versus Bath?
Scrappy game from the looks of it. I've only seen the highlights. There's a penalty try for Wasps for the cynical Nico Matawalu pull back on Nathan Hughes. But besides that, there wasn't a huge amount to it, was there? Gopeth looks good controlling the game, kicking.
I think Gopeth is probably the best signing of the summer.
Yeah.
I really do. I think
he's got to be up so far. I mean, there's quite a few that will have to bed in properly, and there'll be certainly some of the ones coming post-World Cup will be interesting to see. For example, Pickermalls, if he goes anywhere.
I've already got my eyes on a beautifully crafted Canterbury bath top with Pickermalls across the back.
Lovely.
That'd be wonderful. And last but not least, Northampton thumping Newcastle, which in effect is a return to business for Northampton.
Yeah, as expected. And I do expect that will kickstart their season. And they'll get back to playing. They've got a few more of their internationals back in the starting lineup. Like Laws and Tom Wood were both back. Foden got a few tries as well, didn't he?
Has he changed his hair or something? Something happened with Foden recently.
His hair is gone like a long... I'm trying to think who it looks like. A bit like, do you remember when Harry Kewell had an Alice band? It's a little bit like that.
What's wrong with the man? I'm sure I've seen something else about Foden which is absolutely critical.
Oh, someone tweeted us saying... the only neck rule that should get penalised is this one.
Yes, that's the one.
Ben Foden wearing a blazer and an orange turtleneck.
Oh, Ben.
That was very good. I enjoyed that.
Excellent. Right, well, pretty much it, is it not?
I think you're missing a fantastic Ulster performance against Cardiff.
Okay, tell me about the Hobby League. Go on.
Well, unfortunately, because I was at this wedding... And up in Edinburgh, and my selfish girlfriend and CJ's lovely wife wanted to have a nice evening of wine and food. We didn't get to watch this game, but it was as expected.
That's ridiculous.
Also, win it at home. Very nice Andrew Trimble try.
Great report. As you well know, I love everything which comes out the Pro 12. So anything else you can update me with, fantastic.
Someone else you do love is Stuart McCloskey, the massive.
I do like Stuart McCloskey, actually, yes.
6'4", 108kg Ulster inside centre. Who scored a try?
Right, enough Hobby League now. I'll just leave it with this. On Friday night, me, Phil, and a fantastic group of fellow Rugby Rangers are heading down to Bath.
Rugby Rangers?
Rugby Rangers.
I've never heard of the Rugby Rangers. I've heard of Rennie Ranger.
No, Rugby Rangers, you know.
Is Rennie Ranger going to be there, though?
No, he's not. But we will be there. We'll be there with Brim Williams. We'll be there with a couple of RGC lads. And I think we're even going to be joined by a rather well-renowned coach.
A well-renowned coach?
A very well-renowned coach, yes.
Mike Ford.
I will not be divulging any more information. But if you want to join us for drinking Bath, find us somewhere around the wreck. We will be immaculately dressed in blazers and ties. And we'll see you on Thursday. People on a diet, scrum is straight, term is right, I don't deny it, test me, try it, style you don't buy it, I'ma grab the microphone and start to fly it, up, up, high, grab the mic and make you cry, told you before we represent L.I., London Irish, you can't deny this, so, so sick, a talent you can't buy this.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.